Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
£100 mm-hmm. weight loss journey that yeah. you started on.
Yeah, I lost. So I suppose at the peak it was like 105 or 110 pounds that I lost.
It's like another human.
It's crazy. It's mental. I think just finding movement and finding fitness, it really, really saved my life.
Did you ever get the ball, like kind of what your trigger was, if you don't mind speaking about it?
I went through a couple of just like nasty bits when I was a teenager. Definitely a lot of self-harm that I didn't realise was self-harm, I think.
From drinking every day, did you get hangovers?
No. You get to a point where your tolerance gets so high that you just stop being hungover. But I mean, at university, I was drinking in the mornings as well. So I'd have like a flask of vodka that I'd attach to my keys. And then I'd drag all my, you know, my friends to the pub at lunch because I was the fun girl that, you know. So I just don't think I ever really sobered up.
Hello and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Haldon.
And Benjamin Haldon. This week is a guest episode. And I know we're not here now, but we are in the Gymshark store this week in a nice, beautiful setting. I think this is the first one. No, this is the second one falling in that setting.
Yeah, it is the second. It is. I got confused in thinking it was the first, but it's the second.
And today in the Gymshark store, we are joined by Cassia Tierney Clark.
Cassia's journey is one of the most inspirational ones we have seen. She went on a 100-pound weight loss journey. She was a binge drinker and she consumed alcohol every day and it overtook her life completely. Mm-hmm. She suffered with depression, her mental health, and also binge eating. And we dive into this today because she is such an inspirational woman and is now running things such as ultramarathons.
I think the thing that's great with this episode as well, because we don't always do this, we had a guest on who is also a podcaster. Mm. I think you'll probably be able to see that from the episode. She's a really great speaker. There's lots of insightful things to take away from this episode. I mean, especially as people who have spoken quite openly in the past about eating disorders and now my relationship with alcohol, speaking to someone else who's been on a sober journey themselves, how they've managed to do that, how they've gone from non-runner to being a really good runner and dealt with a lot of life problems and issues to now really come out the other side of it. It was really inspiring. I think you guys will take a lot from this episode.
We hope you love it just as much as we did. Enjoy. Cassia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
We are going to dive in with a hard-hitting question. Do you think running is a good way to lose weight?
Do you know what? I was just thinking about this morning. How interesting. No. And I'll explain.
Yeah.
I think running is a sport. I don't think running is a weight loss tool. It's quite a high impact, very all-consuming sport to get into. I think walking is an amazing way to lose weight. That's how I started losing weight. And yeah, running in general, you know, it could help you cultivate a lifestyle that, you know, helps you lose weight. But running and training for marathons and having to fuel the way that we have to eat and the things you put your body through, I don't think necessarily would be the best tool for weight loss. As a beginner, I'm saying, you're better off creating kind of like a sensible deficit through a little bit more of a lifestyle change, I'd say. But maybe not training for an ultra will help you on your weight loss journey. That comes later, but that's the beautiful thing. Absolutely. Chapters. So,
and for people who don't know your journey, I've actually followed you for a really long time. It's really special to have you on the podcast as well. You said you started your weight loss journey with walking, which is obviously something we would recommend as well for a lot of people. Correct me if I'm wrong, but was it a 100-pound mm-hmm. weight loss journey that yeah. you started on?
Yeah, I lost, so I suppose at the peak it was like 105 or 110 pounds that I lost.
It's like another human.
It's crazy. It's mental. Now I think as you do in a weight loss journey, people tend to lose it and then gain muscle. And now I don't weigh myself, so I have no idea. But it was about 100 pounds. And it certainly feels, or at least I do feel like a completely different person. It took me quite a long time, like four or five years really, to lose the weight. And it's been an interesting few years for sure. Mm-hmm. My life is completely different because of it. And I think just finding movement and finding fitness, it really, really saved my life. And I think a lot of people will tell you the same story who have been on weight loss journeys like this. It's it becomes less about the weight and more about the freedom that you sort of give yourself through losing that weight and becoming fit. It's like, yeah, it's a whole new world for me.
I'm glad that you said that. I think there's been pushback before when I put posts up about running not being a good weight loss tool, because some people do lose weight through running. I think the best way to give an analogy to people or explain it is, like, you could buy two different really good fillet steaks. Mm-hmm. One will cost you £5, one will cost you £10. You still end up with the same result at the end. You sit down, you have a nice dinner. You just paid more of a cost for one of them. And that's the same with running. You'll just pay a higher cost for doing that because the fatigue's higher. The stimulus is way higher. Yeah. And people need to think, like, can I sustain this for long periods of time? And for most people, the answer will be no, just because it's so high fatigue. And especially if you're starting off heavier, that fatigue's even higher as well.
Absolutely. There is no way I would be running 10Ks of the weight that I was before. And I know that, you know, running is for all body types at all weights and is an inclusive sport. However, just talking about me and my journey, walking is really what changed the game for me, and walking in nature, which became jogging, which became running, and now I run for sport. But it's definitely, it might be a little bit much at first to also just to overwhelm yourself with the idea of a marathon, you know, because it is very normalized on social media and especially in our circles, you know, people are doing crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. Every week you're like, oh, she's running on the moon or whatever it is, you know. Yeah. But as a real beginner, just really, really dialing it back and looking at, like, cool, you know, can I address my relationship with food, my relationship with myself? Could I walk 5K steps a day instead of trying to, you know, overwhelm yourself with the prospect of a half marathon, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what does that turn your relationship into with running as well? If it's purely a hamster wheel for you to burn calories, I think if you start off with that mindset, it ruins what running's really about, which is the body's natural way to explore different places. And I think you can take that enjoyment away from running then if it's just a purpose for you to burn energy and burn calories, which is what I try and get across to most people, because there's plenty of other tools which you can use which are more beneficial, and then use running to build that aerobic base to be able to see different places, to be able to meet different people. And I think it's really just unfortunate for people to set out on that journey and then it becomes
punishment
for people.
Absolutely.
And it just becomes, even for some people, a form of non-purge bulimia, where it's just using it to purge calories or purge food that's been swabbled down on the weekend.
Yep. Or it kind of leads them to a place of burning out, you know, and lacking enjoyment in other aspects of their life. And I think I see this a lot in clients or people that I've worked with. If they start expressing real fear over missing a session, that's when you know there's, like, something going on. Because you should just be able to skip a run if you need to, and it's not a big deal. Running should feel like your friend and not some sort of thing that you're chained to. Like you say, it's like exploring new places, meeting new people. There's so much more to running, but it has to feel friendly. And if, you know, if you're pairing that with a weight loss journey, which is so, you know, you need so much support because there's so much going on mentally when you're losing weight in order to stay safe in that place, I just want everyone to just feel like they're running for the right reasons, you know?
Your weight loss journey is something that you speak about quite heavily online. And from what I've seen anyway, from my perspective, and I'd love you to touch on this, you had experienced quite a difficult relationship with alcohol through binge drinking and binge eating. What was it that clicked in your mind where you simply couldn't go on with that lifestyle anymore, and you made a very, very big lifestyle change?
Yeah, I think this is like probably one of the biggest questions I get asked, is like, what was the moment, or like, what was it? And I always answer saying there like wasn't really a turning point. It wasn't like a kind of sign from God, or like one Tuesday I just was like, that's it, I'm putting the bottle down. And, you know, I just got really sick and tired of living the way that I was. Certainly, I think physically it wasn't the weight so much as I couldn't recognize myself anymore, and my parents couldn't recognize me anymore. So, you know, the features on my face were incredibly swollen, and I wasn't able to be active at all. And that's not a life. And I know that for some people, fitness isn't everything, and I get that. But when I was little, I loved running and playing with animals and being in nature. And that was everything to me. And that was also my relationship with my family too, because they like doing that. And losing that, losing myself to a lifestyle that just wasn't, I don't think it was really me. It was just me trying to cope and medicate. But it was just piece by piece and little by little. You know, I started by going to therapy. That was the main thing, because if you don't fix what's in here, you're not going to be able to deal with this. And so I got help from my binge eating. And I mean, that took a year, and I didn't lose any weight in the first year. You know, I was just trying to figure out why I was doing what I was doing, why I was self-harming with food and alcohol, what was going on for me. And I still drank throughout my whole journey. It was just, you know, I went from a bottle of wine a night to a glass of wine a night, which then went to two glasses of wine a week. And now I live alcohol-free. So there wasn't like a big moment. It was just a slow sort of turning of feeling better, and then regressing and having slip-ups and so many plateaus and everything. But it was just kind of a slow burn, really. Mm. It wasn't so much like a big moment of like, I'm sick of this, you know. There were a few things that I think probably when my dad said that he couldn't recognize me anymore, that was a bit of a, because I'm an only child and I just wanted to make him proud. So that was, you know, that was definitely a difficult moment. But apart from that, it was just being sick and tired, I think.
It's interesting to you speak about that as well, because I had therapy for probably 12 months for an eating disorder as well. And I mean, it'd be interesting to see, like, did you ever, one, get to the bottom of like what some of the triggers were and what were the causes of it were? But then I think also the motivating thing for other people is knowing that it wasn't just like a light switch that went on or off.
No.
And that there was occasions where it happened again along your journey. Because I think a lot of people, if they're in a journey of therapy or recovery, believe that if they're progressing and then they maybe regress or have an occasion where something's happened again, it's like, oh, I'm back at the start line again. And it doesn't work that way. There's going to be grey areas where things will happen. It's not just on or off, and you haven't failed and you've got to go back to square one again, which I think is an easy mindset to slip into with it as well.
Definitely, yeah. People are very black and white, or, you know, I'm failing, I'm succeeding, there is no in between. But I always like to think of mistakes as just sort of a chance to try again, but with a better understanding. So every time you make a mistake, you learn something, so you're stronger. So the next time you come across that problem, you know that you have the tools to equip yourself to sort of do it again and do it better.
Yeah, I think it's then easy to go into that. My main thing was self-sabotage, and then just throwing it all out the window. Mm-hmm. The one thing that rings true to me in my head when I'm thinking about things, that I have things like I fuck up sometimes or get tendencies. I think that's part of the thing. If you've had an eating disorder before, it doesn't just completely go away. It's something that you've got to continue to deal with. An analogy that helps me is thinking about, like, if I had £100 and lost £10 and I wouldn't throw the other £90 out the window, I'd still benefit from what's already in front of me and moving forward what I still got in my hand. That helps me sometimes not go into that whole fuck it mentality and just completely throw everything else out the window.
Definitely.
But what was, did you ever get to the bottom of like kind of what your trigger was, if you don't mind speaking about it?
Yeah, I went through a couple of just like nasty bits when I was a teenager that seemed to be keeping me in a kind of form of, I would say, definitely a lot of self-harm that I didn't realize was self-harm. I think that was a big thing. And I was bullied a lot at school. So my self-image has always been quite negative. And I'm still like working on that. Like it's difficult to perceive myself in a positive light. And I'm really trying to be a bit nicer to myself now. But it's a lifelong journey. But it was just a lot to do with, I think, you know, not feeling like I deserved to be fit, or I deserved to eat well, or I deserved to, you know, I don't know, be sober. Like there was a lot of running away and harming with substances. And I think that so many people get themselves into an awful state with alcohol, not realizing that they are actually self-medicating or self-harming with it. And there's a difference between having fun and partying, which is all well and good, and all my mates do it, and I've got nothing against alcohol. But, you know, you can recognize when someone's using it or struggling. And I just think a lot of people should be a bit more open with why they're doing what they're doing.
I think as well with your journey, because you're very transparent online, and a lot of people on social media in general, in the fitness space, they are not that transparent. And I can imagine when you were on your personal weight loss journey, there'll be loads of people listening to this podcast who listen to your podcast who were also on that journey. And from what you've said, it sounds like it in parts was a very lonely place for you, losing 100 pounds, 110 pounds, or the weight. I would just love to know from your perspective, because I assume there was moments where you wanted to give up, probably a lot of moments where you wanted to give up. How did you not? Because that is a hard journey to be on your own.
God, yeah. There were moments where I did give up, I will say. Like 2020, you know, when the pubs reopened. Because lockdown, I know for a lot of people, it was very, very difficult. And I was incredibly privileged for it to afford me a space to be alcohol-free, because the pubs and bars closed. So that kind of forced me, you know, into my bedroom and to be able to look inside a little bit more. But when the pubs reopened in 2020, I spent like a month on a bender with my mates. So I went all the way back to square one. And really what got me through it was, I heard you spoke about this today on your story, actually, your why, you know, and my why has always been freedom. And when I was little, I'd always loved sort of running and being in nature and sort of feeling that sort of freedom for myself. And falling back into habits with alcohol was really stemming from a place of insecurity of myself and not knowing myself. And it became like an automatic habit that I slipped back into, like, okay, I'm feeling nervous, I'm feeling like this isn't working, I'm going to have a drink, and then I'm going to have another drink, and then it's going to last for a few days. And then I'm going to start saying, oh, this running thing, I'm not sure, like, it's a bit embarrassing, I'm embarrassed to tell my mates, I'm just going to go to the pub, you know, I'm not going to make a go of it. And then the pub's closed again. And I actually remember being in Sainsbury's, and I was going to buy some vodka, and I think it was a moment where I was just like, this is a crossroads moment, and I've told this story on my podcast, but this is a crossroads moment. Are you going to get drunk tonight, or do you want to go and run in the dark in the rain? Run in the dark in the rain, you know, go and do the thing. And those little moments kind of added up for me, where I realized that when I got back from the run, I started to feel almost this like euphoria and this kind of thing of like, God, I've really done something. I've done something hard, and I'm going to do it again tomorrow, you know? So avoided the vodka, did the hard thing, the next day did it again. And then I think it just clicked. And everyone I think who's a runner or has had a similar journey will tell you there is a moment where you almost become addicted to like self-progression, because you realize, you're like, shit, I just ran 7 kilometers. Holy shit, dude. Yeah. Like, what if I could run 10? And then you do like 6 months later, and then before you know it, you're running half marathons, and then you're just in it. And you never go back, because that's, you just know the truth, you know, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah.
It's that evidence, isn't it? Again, you're never going to have that confidence without the evidence being there. But you've got to put yourself in that uncomfortable situation to be able to provide yourself with the evidence, and then lead into the confidence. And I think someone just DM'd me before even about the run club that we got tonight, and they're like, I'm not a runner. Even that in itself, in terms of what you identify as, is important, because mm-hmm. there's a certain point where you go, I'm going to just go for a run. Mm-hmm. And then there's a certain point where you go, I'm a runner, because mm-hmm. you then identify as it, because you built the confidence and the evidence. And I suppose it's interesting, even from your perspective, meeting a challenge that big, is that you've never lost £100 before. You've probably never ran over 10K before. You've never got to grips with your relationship with alcohol. You've never overcome binge eating before. It's then how do you create that motive and that drive to be able to take on this big hill that you've got no evidence before that you can really take on? But my other question was, did you at any point within the stage of gaining your relationship back with alcohol have to remove yourself from any friendship groups or social groups?
Yeah. My friends are amazing, and they have been very, very, very patient with me. And I think mostly in the last 2 years, seeing my businesses grow and being understanding. But it is very difficult to... I want to be careful because I don't want to upset anyone, but it is very, very difficult to go after your goals if the people in your life are not on the same wavelength. I think it's important to assess who you're surrounding yourself with and who your circle is and if they're supporting your goals. I would say the main thing is don't let people make you feel silly for doing things. I was made to feel quite silly for saying that I wanted to be a runner, where I wanted to start a business, or I was posting about my silly little journey online. I will say, with binge drinking being so normalized in UK culture, I think that does happen within friend groups a lot, and it's very easy to miss out on your mates who maybe aren't doing okay. I think it can blank over a lot of issues, and, you know, especially when, if you are embodying a party person persona, there's a lot of bravado and a lot of false confidence that comes along with that, that you're going to miss out on people who are really, really struggling with their mental health. And removing yourself from those circles, if it's temporary, like it was for me, you know, I had to just go off and be in solitude for, you know, a few months and really, really figure my stuff out. Hopefully the people who are meant to be your mates and are meant to be there for you will stick around. Mine did. I lost a couple, of course, like, because I'm not going to go out and do shots with them, so they don't want to be my mate anymore. Not a loss, you know, but the ones that are meant to be there for you will stay. And my friends, we're like chalk and cheese. None of them are into fitness at all. None of them. They're like, you are mental. But they come to my races, you know, it's sweet, man. Mm. Like, and then they go to the pub. Ah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I think also the flip side of it is also showing other people patience, because if you have been this person your whole life and that's what you've built your relationships on with people, and all of a sudden you become someone else, that's really hard on your mates. And I made the mistake of expecting everyone to congratulate me and encourage me and be there for me, when actually, you know, my best girlfriend was like, where's Cassia? Like, I miss having wine with you. I miss that time with you. Like, we don't have to drink, but I still need you as a friend, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's a very difficult one. And it's so nuanced, but yeah, your circle, it's important. And the people I have now, new friends, are people who are sort of doing similar things, and we kind of grow together and have ideas, and it's all very exciting. But you must never forget about the mates that were there for you, you know.
I think even that's difficult, and this is even a difficult thing to think about, is that I think it was Alex Hormozzi who was talking about the other day about that sort of comment with people want you to do well but not better than them. And when you do start to do that, people start to become jealous and almost try and pull you down a little bit, and that can even happen with friends or family, believe it or not. You always think that people like that had the best intentions for you, but yeah, sometimes those people who put the biggest blockades in your way, and that's it's something really difficult to try and digest, especially if it's coming from people who are really close to you.
Certainly. I think Robert Greene has this theory about mastery and mastery of self, whether that's in fitness or your career or your mental health, whatever it is, that he says that something about self-mastery evokes in other people the thorns of jealousy. And it's an uncomfortable one, because envy and jealousy are not things that people admit to, but the thorns of those will sort of show themselves as being people making fun of you for entering races, mm-hmm. people trying to drag you to the pub, people, you know, there's so many ways that people show that. And it's just about kind of taking a step back and realizing, like, is that going to align with my purpose? You know, I've got one shot at this little life here, and what I want to build, is this person going to help me, or are they trying to drag me down? You know, it's uncomfortable though.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
It's also, we speak about it so much. When you go through different phases of your life, there will be people for those different phases as well who come in and who are new. It's like when I got into the fitness space, I did lose quite a lot of friends at uni because I started this when I was at uni. And they were all going out drinking a lot. I didn't really like alcohol because it used to give me severe anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I really stuck out because I didn't like drinking. It made me very stressed, very anxious. I didn't deal well with hangovers. And the only reason I went out was to stay friends with certain people. And when I stopped doing that and I started focusing on what we do today and, you know, it's like Instagram and fitness, and I used to get really picked on for it. And I'm not friends with some of those people anymore. It's just like one or two in particular who stuck it out, who understood it. You then grow into a next phase. I'm friends with a lot of runners
mm-hmm.
and they're amazing and they're wonderful. And then I will hopefully be a mum one day. And I'm assuming I'll meet
you'll have your
mums at mum club.
Yeah.
And you go through phases of different things. And I've lost friends who I don't really truly feel I've lost completely.
Mm.
It's just at the moment we're not aligned. And that is absolutely fine. They're doing what they want to do. I'm doing what I want to do. And then it might do a full circle in 5 years. And you'll meet up and you'll be friends again. Because there's so many people that I love a lot. And they're very special. But we don't speak anymore. And that's absolutely fine. But it might do full circle. And I'm completely okay with that. But I used to not be okay with it. I used to really... like I was letting people down or I was being a bad friend. And it's not... just as you said, you do get one life, and it's important that sometimes you just have to look at what deeply that you want, that you need.
Especially at this age, and what you guys have built with my coach app and this podcast and like everything you do. I'm such a fangirl. But like, this is your time to build something for your future family. And I think, you know, career-wise, it's difficult for people when you become in demand and busy and your calendar is a little bit harder to like schedule in when you're going to see people. But it's uncomfortable, but you have to be a little bit selfish and say like, this is kind of my moment, dude. Like, this is my time and I really, really, really want to capitalize on it and I really want to do this thing. And, you know, when I'm older and I have kids and I retire on a ranch, then come over for a month and I'll see you then. But like, it is okay to be selfish with your time and energy when you're trying to build something for yourself or others, you know.
I think that bit's important. What you just touched on then is the time mm-hmm. in your life. I think that's super important because I think I've often thought about this in terms of, yeah, you have some people around you who are treadmill people and some people are super feel in terms of some people will give you energy, some people will take it away from you. And then I sometimes think about, but do I need to be that treadmill person who pulls my friends out of the place that they're in? Or is it time to like wave the white towel a little bit and say, okay, we need to move on from this point? Mm. And that's a difficult thing to try and process as well sometimes.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. You gotta have people around you that are supportive, but more than anything, just understanding, you know, like I burn out quite easily just because of my mental health stuff and how much I'm trying to run and also do the startup thing. And you guys know it's like insane. And there are some times where I just have to text my friend and say like, dude, I just need to lie on the floor tonight, face down and be very still. Mm-hmm. And it's nice when people say like, I understand.
Yeah.
You know, I'll see you for a coffee when you're ready. And I know this isn't a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think you should feel like that. I think sometimes accepting that you're going to feel like that makes it feel easier. Cause I was always like, God, I'm always tired. I'm always feeling shitty or I'm worn out or I'm not moving as fast as forward like I would like to, but knowing that that's how most people are feeling in this position makes it feel a little bit easier.
I thought I was mental for a long time until I started following women and men who are in similar positions and hearing them talk about burnout and the pressures of everything, and then I started to feel a bit normal.
You're a part of the circle.
Yeah,
and it's I used to really struggle with saying no
mm-hmm.
to friends, and I used to say, oh no, I'm really sorry, I've got da 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 da. And yeah. I used to make something up, an excuse, or just pull something out when I've now got to the stage of my friends and they're so wonderful. The ones who aren't in the fitness space, the ones who are in the fitness space just get it. I'm like, no, I can't, too busy. The ones who aren't in the fitness space, I used to try and make excuses to not seem, not just to say no. Whereas now, I think I've grown mentally to be able to, and I know they have, and I just didn't think they got it, but they did completely. Mm. I can just say, no, I just need to sit on the couch and do nothing. Mm. Not, no, I'm really sorry, and make yeah. up an excuse, because I didn't really, it wasn't necessarily lying to them, but I'd really want to come up with a reason why I couldn't do something, yeah. or if it was going out drinking, and I was just like, no, I've got this, and that. Now I'm just like, No.
Yeah. It's hard to get to that space, though. Mm-hmm. I think as well, when you're dealing with so much pressure, and I mean, you must communicate with like 100 people a day. Like, you know what I mean? Mm. It's a lot. Mm. So it's nice sometimes to just, I just like to sit and disassociate,
yeah.
you know, and just let it kind of, because also you've got to protect your mental health, and your real pals should understand that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I think everyone likes to focus on the skylights and the highlights, but no one wants to talk about that. The real thing is just shoveling shit every day, and that's part of the process of being successful in any means. But then that's why it's nice to have that relatability or hear other people speak about it. Mm-hmm. You also, how long sober are you now?
Gosh, I am alcohol. I'm not sober. I'm alcohol free because I don't want to get in trouble. I mean, this year is like full alcohol free. I did the whole like. Because I was people pleasing, trying to have one glass of Prosecco that I would be like pouring down the sink, but I'd have a sip. So I guess for the last like 6 months, I've been fully like actually, like I went to my friend's birthday in Camden the other night, which I wasn't going to go to, but then I was like, no, I'll just go. Mm. My worst nightmare, but it's fine. Mm-hmm. And I went up to the bar and they were like, you're all going to do baby Guinnesses. And it was the first time I said out loud, I don't drink alcohol, like to a new group of people. And I was like, and they're like, okay, do you want like a shot of lime juice or something? And I was like, oh yeah, that'd be really nice.
But how freeing is it when you do that?
So cool. And people are, you know, people, they don't ask why, they don't. I think it's becoming more normal, you know.
I think sometimes just putting that out there, though, makes it a lot easier and clearer, because
definitely.
I am now 160 days sober, I think.
Amazing.
And before I was saying, oh yeah, I think I'm not going to drink tonight. Mm. But then when I said to people, I'm going sober, people are a lot more understanding about it. Mm-hmm. It's almost like saying like I'm doing a challenge, and people are more understanding of what you're doing. For people who are maybe considering it in terms of giving up alcohol or are on that journey at the moment, sell me the benefits that you've noticed of giving up alcohol.
Okay, I'll start with the physical, because I think that's probably one of the most, I mean, for me, obviously the change is very drastic because I was drinking every day, but inflammation goes down. You know, it's easier to be fit, I think. You know, you don't miss sessions, you feel more in tune with your body. Mentally, for me, it's the reduced anxiety that just did it for me. Like, I could not handle being anxious because of alcohol anymore. But it's the clarity in my mind that I think is the best thing ever. Like, for a few years, I think me and my parents were quite worried that I was a little bit stupid. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved reading, and I really love writing, and I like to think I'm quite well-spoken sometimes, but I'd really lost that, and I'd lost this kind of like feeling of wanting to learn or put things out into the world, and I'd lost all my drive and purpose and passion, and I just was so lost and confused. And it was the alcohol that was just slowly dumbing me down, because it affects your cognitive function. And if anyone out there does or is thinking about being alcohol free, I would say give it a go for a month or give it a go for 2 weeks and just see. That's how I did it at first. I slowly went down. And then I remember I did my first ever with my dad, 7 days alcohol free. And I felt amazing. It was just life changing, because you'd wake up in the morning and you have this kind of, when you're exercising, you're eating well, and you're not drinking, coming from someone who did, you know, none of those things before, that feeling in the morning when you wake up is euphoric. It's like having a shot of tequila. So I just feel like that all the time. Of course, not all the time, but, you know, there are moments where I'm like out on a run, or I'm laughing with my mates, or I'm really, really present in a conversation. And I just think like, shit, this is better than drinking. Mm-hmm. And I get this all the time. And it's not, you know, I'm not paying for it later. It's not taxing on my body. It's just like total, total presentness. And I think it's, for me, it's freedom. It's total freedom. So those would be, that would be me trying to sell it. I think it's not for everyone. Some people can moderate alcohol brilliantly and have an amazing relationship with it. You know, all my mates do pretty much. But for the people who are a little bit extreme, sometimes it's about having that hard conversation with yourself and saying like, do I take this to the extremes? Like, am I running away from something here? Could I maybe experiment? Does the idea of a week off alcohol scare me?
Yeah.
Does that scare me? If it does, why does it? Is there something deeper going on? Could I take a week off? You know, yeah, lots of questions to ask yourself.
From, this is more my curiosity, from drinking every day, do you get did you get hangovers?
No.
Does it just, it just doesn't?
No, yeah. So you get to a point where you kind of stop. I mean, I was a little hungover sometimes, but your tolerance gets so high that you just stop being hungover. But I mean, at university, I was drinking in the mornings as well. So I'd have like a flask of vodka that I'd attach to my keys, or I'd have like a screwdriver in the morning. And then I'd always...
What's a screwdriver?
Orange juice and vodka. Oh. Get to know, Lisa.
Yeah, God, I'm not with it, am I? Screwdriver.
And then I'd drag all my, you know, my friends to the pub at lunch because I was the fun girl, that, you know. So I just don't think I ever really sobered up. I mean, obviously you don't feel good, but it's weird. I can't imagine how that felt now. Mm. I was trying to do this in therapy. I was trying to visualize like how I used to feel in my body and being so sick, in my mental health. And I just can't seem to feel it anymore, but I know that I didn't feel good. That's for sure. Yeah.
I guess it's like DOMS then. You do more sets and more reps and then it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You just said then that you were the fun girl.
Mm.
Do you feel you had a big identity shift when you went alcohol free? Because we speak about this quite a lot. Identity is something we attach to and it's very pivotal in our lives. And I identified, mine's quite different, but as a swimmer completely my whole life until I was 18. And then as soon as I quit, I lost all purpose, all sense of who I am. I didn't know what I was doing with my life. And it was absolute meltdown mode. I didn't recognize myself without swimming. And I'm curious to see how your identities are different from then being the fun girl. Because I imagine you're still very fun, but in probably a slightly different way.
I think, and anyone who's had any kind of recovery journey will tell you there's a slight pendulum. I think I certainly, you know, I was on that side of like very, very extreme fun. I wasn't having fun. To then being very, very into fitness and alcohol free and actually becoming a little bit too serious. Mm-hmm. And I think now I'm just starting to see the pendulum swing back to like getting to know myself a little bit more and allowing myself to be a bit more silly or, you know, engage in things that are fun, horse riding, whatever it is, you know, my hobbies. But I think desensationalizing fun is a big thing because what I thought was fun wasn't fun. That's not fun, like drinking yourself into a complete state and then waking up with like cuts and bruises all over yourself isn't fun. You can't argue that that's like a hobby. So sobering up or becoming alcohol free has actually, I would say, like allowed me to connect with myself even more because I didn't really know who I was without that. And I've been able to kind of learn things about myself through fitness. And it's really very, very difficult to admit to yourself, if you're into spiritual stuff, it's called shadow work, you know, the parts of yourself that are very dark and things that you don't necessarily like about yourself and that you want to change. A lot of those can be masked with booze and partying because there's a lot of people in that same energy doing the same things. So putting that in the light and saying, you know, this is a part of myself I don't like and I'd like to change is very, very scary. But when you start to accept your whole part of your person, you can kind of discover yourself a little bit more, I think. So Cassia, I think I've only just met her, really. I think I only just am getting to know her. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a little baby. And I'm thirsty. I'm just turned
30. Identity is so interesting though, because even with that then, in a group of you identify as like the joker or the fun one, then you just, you take on that role. You're always the one like maybe standing on chairs, drinking, the first to get shots in. And then that's validated by people around you. So then it's almost like an actor on a stage who's getting applause. You then become the character because that's what you're getting the applause for. I think that's a difficult role to probably then try and get out of. Yeah, especially if it's always being validated. And that's how you've changed into. You see people do it on social media all the time. People put certain types of posts out because they know that they do well. It's then validated so that all that person's posts become about that. They then identify as that and it becomes them, the person that they probably didn't even want to become in the first place. So identity is so interesting. And someone was saying about how identity still lacks reality by 2 years. So, I mean, do you think that your identity is caught up to kind of where you've moved into with your sober journey? Because I know for me, that was one of the big parts of why I wanted to go sober is that I thought I would be boring if I didn't go out and drink, and that I wouldn't have confidence, when in reality I just needed to experience more of me sober to then accept myself when I was out.
Definitely. I won't even pretend to say that I think I've caught up with who I am now, you know. A huge part of losing weight and going sober and doing all this stuff is that you're brain, I think, takes a little bit of time to catch up to it. So I still sometimes look in the mirror and I'm like, who's that dude? I don't know. But yeah, it's difficult to detach yourself from those identities. But I think it's very much about like tuning into what your subconscious mind is saying to you. Like if your subconscious mind is always saying, you're boring, you're lame, you're boring, you need to drink, just kind of coming up and meeting that and saying out loud, like I talk to myself a lot, but say like, Cassia, you're really fun. Like this is really fun and running's really fun and people find it interesting and that can be fun, you know? So just letting that be your reality instead of giving into the thoughts of like, you're lame, you're boring, people don't like you anymore, your friends have forgotten about you, you know? Just trying to have a little bit of self-assurance and confidence, which is difficult when your identity's been tied up in partying, but it is possible. It just, I'm getting there with it. I'm catching up. Like, this is very surreal.
Mm-hmm. This is amazing. I'm looking forward to it.
I think that's brilliant, though, because, again, what's the voice that you'll hear most in your life?
You. Yeah.
One of the things you actually touched on then, Ben, and it sparked something. So Ben is now, how many days sober? You just said it before.
160. I haven't got that app on
160
me.
160 is up. You went through quite a heavy stage of drinking. And I've never been a big drinker. I just love a glass of red with my meal. Like, that's me, and it always has been. Ben was going out a lot and drinking a lot. And it, in a way, like a little bit through periods, I would say, affected our relationship at the time. There were certain things that I would be really sad if he was going out all the time, or I felt really left out, but then I felt boring, or... Mm. It was a bit of a mismatch, I'd say, for that summer. It was very different because I had never kind of changed, and we actually moved to a place, and a lot of our friends did drink and it was great. Whereas I was always the sporty kid, stayed through and through. She doesn't really drink a lot. It wouldn't bat an eyelid if I wasn't drinking. Whereas you felt quite a lot of pressure to drink. And I was just wondering if you ever had like relationships that were affected because of alcohol, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't keep a relationship. So that's how it affected it. You know, I think because I didn't know myself at all, or at least I was like masking so much with booze, and all the dates I went on were, I was drunk. I never let anyone actually know me. So I was single, you know, because I just couldn't, I couldn't seem to connect with people. And I was always wondering, like, why am I meeting these assholes? And it's like, because you're meeting them in bars. Not that there's anything wrong, you know. I always like to say that alcohol isn't the problem, I'm the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, there are certain people who just have that wretched relationship with alcohol. But it just completely ruined, I think, any relationship that I tried to have because I was erratic. I know that I've always been a good person and my intentions have always been kind. But I didn't like who I was when I was drinking, and certainly I wouldn't have wanted to be in a relationship with me when I was struggling like that. I was just doing my best, but it wasn't yeah, it wasn't easy, I think, for people.
Yeah, I think that's commendable that you've sort of noticed that from the meetings you're having, because if every time you're meeting someone, it ends up with them being an arsehole, the common denominator is probably you, which is difficult to try and swallow. Yeah. I think even with that thing, like where I was drinking, I think I almost needed to reach that peak of doing it.
Yeah.
It's called, what's it called? Something paradox. It's basically where you meet the ceiling of like where you can buffer underneath it when something doesn't become hard enough, but then it needs to push past it to really create change. Mm. People do it with relationships and jobs and stuff. They kind of exist underneath this pain threshold, whereas if they were pushed to a little bit more painful, they would make that switch.
Right.
I think that's what I needed with that, was to push it past the point of where it was like just comfortable enough to exist in that zone for me to then go, shit, I need to
change.
Make a change.
That wasn't anything on you, though. It was just like an example that I was thinking.
Sorry, just take that knife out of the back.
I just remember it being quite, I just remember that summer a lot with the alcohol, and I felt really like, I am so boring, like I'm so not a part of this.
I think that might even come down to because you did a lot of sports that were solo, and I did a lot of like rugby, football. So I was always lads, but not drinking.
Yeah.
And then I kind of come away from that. And then when I was back with people again, it was like lads, drinking.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. Sorry, that was completely off the blue that I spoke about. But one of the things that I did want to touch on, because I'm very aware, and you've touched on this throughout the podcast, is your mental health. And we're massive advocates of mental health. It is very important. If you're not looking after this, you can't look after yourself. And you had spoken about this on one of your podcasts regarding the Samaritan charity. Mm-hmm. And I listened to this same clip like three times because it was just so monumental, I can imagine, for you at this point. You said it had saved your life. And you obviously don't have to speak about this, but I was just wondering regarding like your mental health and everything that you went through, how you dealt with all that.
Yeah, so I lost a very close family member to suicide 5 years ago, which was kind of one of the big turning points for me to address my own sort of mental health, because I was getting to the point where I knew if I continued that I just wasn't going to be around, or at least I wasn't going to want to be around. And seeing the fallout of that affect my family and anyone who's been through losing someone through suicide, there are so many different emotions that go through that kind of grief, where there's a lot of shame, there's a lot of anger. And I just never, ever wanted to get to a place where I would hurt people and begin to really hurt people because of my mental health. And I knew as well that if I wanted to make any kind of change, because I had tried so many times to sort myself out and like lose some weight, get fit, do all of these things, but it always came down to throwing in the towel because I was too anxious or I was too depressed. So it just came down to my mental health again and again and again. Same with the food stuff. It was all to do with self-sabotage and everything. And it was all to do with my mental health. So knowing that in order to make any kind of real change, it would have to come from what's going on in my head. I'm a huge advocate for seeking therapy if you can. I know that it's a massive privilege to be able to have the resources to do so. So there are so many incredible books and podcasts and resources that can help you try to understand your mental health a little bit more. But for me, it was therapy. But the first step was telling someone that I was really struggling, like seriously struggling. And that's the hardest step, is the first time you tell someone and actually saying out loud, you know, like, I actually can't do this anymore. Like, I cannot do this anymore and I need some help. And I had a friend help me find a therapist, because I just was in a state where I'd say like, you know, I'm really not feeling good, but then I'd make a joke or I'd be like, I'll just throw a party and it's themed, so I'm fine. And they helped me find a therapist, and it went from there. And it's, you know, I've ghosted therapists, I've been in and out, and like, yes, and it's been a real ride. But more than anything, it's just trying to understand yourself and understand what you've been through and how that's informing your present moment, which is your power to go through life, which is so, so important.
Mm. I think it's great that you openly speak about it as well, because there's so many people who are going through things that will never have the courage to reach out or never do the thing until they know that other people I potentially look up to have done it and been through it as well. Mm. So I'm really appreciative that you speak about it openly. I think it'll definitely help a lot of people. It's something that me and Lucy spoke before, as people have both been through therapy.
Yeah.
Probably moving on to one of our last questions, because as much as we'd probably love to pick your brain, we're on a bit of a time schedule before we do a run club tonight as well. Yeah. It's a question that I've asked quite a few people on our podcast before, and it's something that I've stole off one of our previous guests, Mo Gowder. And it is called the eraser test. And it's basically, if you could have a magic eraser, would you apply it to those times that you've been through of hardship and those painful points in your life, knowing that by doing so would also remove the connections, the relationships, the journey and the success that it's led to now?
Oh. You mean like erase everything bad that happened and just, yeah. No, absolutely not. No, I think that's what makes us beautiful is our scars. I think that's wonderful. People wouldn't be interested in me if I was just like, you know, a little runner going around. I think it's our stories that make us so, you know, wonderful as people. And when I meet people and speak to people, if you scratch a little bit under the surface, everyone has a story to tell. And usually it's not very happy. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, people being vulnerable and putting themselves out there is what makes the world go round and us, you know, feel the togetherness, which is so important. So no, never. Maybe some days, but not the whole thing.
Yeah, it is so true. It completely shapes who you are now. And I think the experiences that you had, a lot of them will have been negative and very hard, but it's definitely probably shaped who you are today and made you mentally stronger, that you've been through so much. And I think it's very, very important, the message that you are spreading on social media. You must be helping so many people in a really, really positive way. I've not really seen anyone else like you, and I think it's incredible that you are so authentic and vulnerable online, because not that many people are nowadays, because they get scared to say things in case they're worried about what other people think about them, whereas you're going to be helping so many people, because what you went through, you mentioned it at the start of the podcast, the UK culture for drinking is insane. We've like all felt it in some way or another, like the pressure that people feel. And I guarantee just one person listening to this podcast would be like, oh my God, like I can do this. I can get through it. I imagine people who go into your content every single day, they'll see a video and be like, Cassia did it. Like, yeah. And it's really powerful. Yeah.
The reason why I like it as well is because I think it's become so normalized for people to just go, oh, I just drink all the time, or I'm just overweight and this is the way that I am. And then people reinforce it. And I think people looking at your page and the message that you're putting across is like, no, this isn't me. This is like a form of me. Like, you're not fat. You're like, you don't identify as being fat. You just got body fat, like, or excess of it. And you just need to change some of the habits and behaviors to get there. And I think it's great that the message that you're pointing out will advocate that as well, especially because some of those moments that we just talked about in terms of maybe you're raising, there would have been a version of you in the room next door who's been through all that shit already. You might not be able to hear them or see them, but you've done that and knocked the wall down to get there as well. So I think me and Lucy both massively appreciate what you're doing in the fitness space, and also joining us today to speak about some of those things.
Mm, of course. Well, I think it's just nice for people to have a space where, you know, because there's nothing wrong with being overweight. I was overweight for like 6 or 7 years and I was still a very lovable, worthy person. But those issues are not just eat less, move more, or bark at someone about discipline, or say like train for a marathon. You know, that wouldn't get through to me. I needed to sort out what was going on. And for me, fitness is my happy space. It saved my life, but it won't necessarily be that for everyone. Some people might need to start reading. Some people might need to start painting, but I just want people to find their purpose and know that there's more to life than just self-destruction. You know, that's all.
For our listeners, where can more people find more of you?
I'm Cassia Tierney on Instagram and TikTok, although I don't tend to use that app anymore, but it's fine. And then I have Nine Lives podcast, which is doing quite well, so you can listen.
It's doing very well. Yeah, very well. It's incredible.
Very modest.
You can listen to my dulcet tones every week. And that's it, really.
Yeah, amazing. honestly, one of my favourite. I feel like I could talk to you forever, but we can't because we have a run. We have our own run club to attend. But you're incredible. Keep inspiring everyone. I know everyone who will be listening to this episode. I know all you guys will love it because this is incredible. So make sure you tag us in everything. Keep listening, keep reviewing, and it helps us get amazing guests on like Cassia as well. So again, thank you so much.
Thank you guys.